This is the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show number 151. Hi, you're listening to the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. You can find us at pitchvision.com. You can email us on
coach@pitchvision.com.
And you can call us on
020-88-167-691.
My name's David Hinchliffe, and this week I'm joined by Mark Carraway and Berners. It's going to be a little bit of a Kevin Peterson special this week because this is the last podcast before we launch the Keep Calm and Smash It online coaching courses with Kevin Peterson, and that's going to be pretty exciting for anyone listening. You can head over to pitchvision.com/KP to find out all about that, and we've got our KP Switch Kit competition running at the moment as well, so if you fancy winning some prizes, including a free copy of the Keep Calm and Smash It videos, then head over to pitchvision.com/KP. So, Berners, how's your switch hitting going?
Well, it's developing. I've never really tried that shot, and I doubt I ever will in a game, as I struggle to play kind of conventional shots. But I've got a few. Used to live in Holland, and I've got a few hockey friends, and they took up cricket, and they used to almost play that shot as a standard cover drive, because they're all quite flicky and switchy, and they could get their hands moving into position nicely on the bat. But I was watching New Zealand v South Africa, and it just seems like for some guys, it's about one in three that they tend to play that shot, just shuffle across, change the direction, change the whole dynamics of the game very quickly as soon as you pop one of those out.
Gareth, switch hitting and young cricketers, what's the thinking there when you're a coach and you see a young lad decide to bat left-handed?
Crack on. Basically. Give it a go, you know. If we'd have done it 20 years ago, then there'd have been people raising eyebrows and saying that you can't do that. But we know that people can. And as I think the point that Berners made about the New Zealand-South Africa matches that have been played recently and other matches around the world is that early in a spell, it really can throw a bowler. If somebody starts to whack you both sides of a wicket using sweeps, then you can't defend both sides of a wicket. And it really puts people under pressure, and the kids are seeing that, and they want to have a go at it. Everything that changes in world cricket comes from role modelling, and cricket's so accessible on the television nowadays that the kids want to do it. And I think the challenge for us as coaches is to embrace that rather than curb it.
With these little dip hits and these little flicks over the keeper, fine leg is actually slowly becoming a very, very important fielding position, so I could have a little bit of life in me yet, boys.
Exactly. And this is what's great about the game is that, you know, 15 years ago, even 10 years ago, before 20 cricket came in, you could play people in one-day cricket that really couldn't field very well and hide them in certain positions. But because of the number of shots that are now being played and the different angles that those shots are going into, it's put the real pressure on people to develop their fielding, and that can only be a good thing for the game.
Exactly. And of course, you can win a copy of KP's guide to working out how to play your own switch hit at pitchvision.com/KP. And all you need to do is upload a video of you having a go at it. And if it's funny enough, it doesn't need to be perfect. If it's funny enough, then you're in a chance to win that for free. And even if you don't win the prize, then you can pick up a copy of that for quite cheap. So it's worth doing if you're a fan of KP, you're a fan of switch hitting, you're a fan of scoring runs in ways that aren't necessarily in the old-fashioned textbook anymore.
And it's great that we've got the guy who really put the shot on the map, haven't we? Being able to take people through it. And it was certainly good for you two guys when we were doing the filming to be able to view it and to be able to hear him. I was lucky enough to be the bloke that was throwing balls at him as he was developing that, a number of years ago. It's still a fantastic shot that should be practiced, puts a lot of pressure on the bowler, and it's great to have the guy who developed it talking to people through Pitch Vision.
And KP's going to be on the show this week as well. We've got a first part of our interview with him to help promote his Keep Calm and Smash It online coaching courses. So have a listen out for that later on in the show. But before we do that, I wanted to talk a little bit about the age old debate of players' priorities. And recently, we've seen Ricky Ponting, who is, despite being in the twilight of his cricketing career, is supremely fit and still showing he has a lot of skill by scoring a lot of runs in Test cricket, being dropped by Australia. And at the same time, you've got players like Laxman, senior players like Laxman in the Indian side, who are probably nowhere near the fitness levels of Ponting, relying on skill and perhaps a little bit of past success and reputation to stay in the side, and they're staying in the team. So where in your view do, Gareth, do all those things fit together, skill, fitness and reputation? How much of each do you have to look at when you're deciding whether to keep a player in a side or not?
Well, I think it differs for the formats. As we discussed last week on the show, we talked about the planning process that's going into 2015, and also that one-day cricket is an easier format probably to bring players into, to give them their first taste of international cricket, in the same way as probably at club level, 2020 cricket is the best chance for a youngster to get an early pick into a first 11 and get some experience in the first 11. In terms of how they all sit next to each other, fitness is a prerequisite of international cricket now. It's a prerequisite of county cricket. You see the changes that have been made in county cricket. You look at the IPL and how physical that is, and it's now dripping into the club game. So it's something that's only going to increase in importance over the course of the next 20, 30 years of development of cricket. Is going to be huge, and you see the shots like we've just talked about, the switch hit. You know, unless you've got good stability and good power, you're not going to be able to execute those shots on a regular basis like the guys are doing on the box at the moment. So fitness, to me, one of the best descriptions I ever had. I worked with an S&C coach over in Ireland, who said to me that skill development is like an iceberg, and the physical competency of somebody sits underneath the water and the skill sits on top of it. And the more physically competent you are, the bigger the base that sits underneath, the quicker you can learn skills. And I'm a big believer in that, a massive believer. And going on to Laxman, who you've talked about, who's been a fantastic player over the years. Mm-hmm. The reason why he's able to stay in the side may be a bit political, you know, because in India that does apply, and I'd be very surprised if Laxman was English or Australian at the moment, whether he would still be featuring in the side without necessarily getting the runs that he has done in the past. But he's been fit in the past, and his skills he's developed off the back of a good physical competency. And obviously, as he's aged, he's not quite taken the care and attention that somebody like a Ricky Ponting that you mentioned has done. And in another environment, in another country, he may not still be in the side as a result.
I know in my club, certainly, there is a big move towards picking fitter players above players based on reputation and skill level alone. I mean, obviously, you don't just pick the 11 fittest players. All three work together, but certainly, you know, there's several, I would say three, maybe four players who are probably good enough to play in our first team, but they very rarely get a chance, and they're the first ones to get dropped, purely because their fitness levels are not as high as other guys who are roughly equal in skill. So it just goes to show that the fitness level and reputation, even at club level now, is evening out a lot more, and fitness is becoming an absolutely crucial factor, whereas in the past it was just a nice thing to have.
Having said that, Jesse Ryder, box office, he loves beer and burgers, and he wallops it.
Yeah, he does wallop it, but he doesn't always get picked for sides. And his consistency is consistency is up and down as a result of not having that physical competency beneath him. So when his talent's on top, then he can perform some fantastic feats. But you know, at the end of the day, he's never going to fulfil his talent, which he's obviously got a huge eye for the ball. You know, even when he bowled, I know he's not bowling as much anymore with his back, but even when he bowled, he had the ability to knock out in swing Yorkers like nobody's business. But it's all about maximising your ability, and I don't think that Jesse's going to do that unless he turns himself around massively and as a result, he's not going to achieve what he could have done, because he's a supremely talented cricketer. He can do it every now and again, but you know, it's your choice, I suppose, as a cricketer, whether you want to be one of those or whether you want to be a Ricky Ponting or a Sachin Tendulkar or somebody who can stay, or Alistair Cook, who's going to be at the top of the game for a number of years to come.
I would say that they've probably got a slightly better attitude to it all as well. The fitter guys, nothing against that. The guys are a bit bulkier, but normally the fitter guys are fit for a reason, that they've got discipline. You know, they're up for a challenge, and it's those kind of guys who you typically want to kind of drive you, isn't it? Rather than some guys who aren't too fussed and they all want to, you know, talk about their Saturday night all night long.
So we're here at the Oval on a lovely autumn day, and I'm joined by somebody who I'm very pleased to be meeting for the first time, international batsman Kevin Peterson. Welcome to the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, Kevin.
Thank you very much. Pleasure to be here.
So we're going to be chatting about some of your experiences, some things that you've learned along the way as a young player and also as an international batsman. And it's all part of your online coaching course on Pitch Vision Academy. So are you looking forward to that coming out?
Yeah, I'm extremely looking forward to it. I've never done it before, and I feel it's about time that I do start doing little bits and pieces to give to lots of people out there who watch us, follow us, support us, cheer for us, cheer against us. So any little bits and pieces of advice is great.
So what was your first experience of playing cricket?
My first experience of playing cricket was not a lot of money in our family at all. Just to borrow equipment, just to borrow the school's equipment. And I clearly remember Dad saying to me, the first 50 you score, I'll try and pluck up the finances to buy you a bat. And it took me a very long time, but eventually I did get it as a little nipper in a school game. And on the Sunday we went shopping. The next morning we were shopping and got myself a Duncan Fernley Colt. My first bat.
I played all right that bat?
I think so. From memory, I can't totally remember, but I believe it went okay.
And then when did you start getting coached?
I started getting coached at around the age of 15. A friend of mine, Harry Brown, and Graham Ford, was the coach of the Natal Dolphins at the time. We went down for academy sessions down at Kingsmead in Durban. I was at school. You get a school teacher who teaches you and coaches you and talks about how you go about your business and stuff, but I can't really remember that. I can only remember going down to the academy sessions in Natal at Kingsmead, and I remember those sessions really well. Real tough physical, mental endurance sessions, really hard.
And when would you say you first experienced success?
I think when I first scored my first 100, I was about 17 years of age in a club game in Natal, in Durban, on a Saturday, playing in the senior leagues. And yeah, scoring my first 100 was probably when I thought, wow, I can actually bat. It did feel like a breakthrough, yes. You always have your doubts as to if you'll ever do it. I was an off-spin bowler at the time, batting at number 7, number 8, and coming in and actually doing okay was something that gave me a lot of confidence. And now, it's turned me into a batter who doesn't like bowling.
Do you remember consciously deciding I'm going to be a batsman now rather than a bowler?
Actually, no. I think my bowling sort of petered out a bit. I started here in England as a bowler as well. We batted 7, batted 6, 7, somewhere around there. But my batting became progressively better. I got 1,275 runs in my first county championship season, a lot of one-day runs. And my bowling wasn't so good. I became a part-time bowler. I then became a batter who sort of bowled, and then I became a frontline batter who bowled an over before lunch in a four-day game, and a couple of overs in a one-day game. So yeah, it's something that just sort of petered out and phased out. And because I don't work at it, I get a lot of abuse from a lot of people who say you should still be bowling. There's a lot of overs that you can still bowl, but my philosophy on it is, if you don't have a doosra, or if you're not a mystery spinner, there are some big sixes you get hit for, and I'd rather be the one hitting them than being hit.
When did you think to yourself, I've got the confidence here to be a world-class batsman?
Wow, difficult question. I just used self-belief and self-confidence in everything I did. It was really hard for me coming from South Africa into an England dressing room. English people are totally different to South Africans. You're in a real harsh environment in South Africa growing up there. You then got to fight a system in South Africa as well. So you've got some pretty huge stumbling blocks that you've got to overcome. Coming to England was really difficult, and it was really hard in the dressing room. The only way to get me through was self-confidence and belief. And goodness, even if I wasn't playing, I kept telling myself, you are playing well. So it's a difficult question to answer exactly when it was. I don't know when it was, but I just kept believing and kept the confidence.
Tell us a little bit more about coming to England. How did that feel when you experienced those initial difficulties?
Yeah, very hard coming to England because of the fact that you had no family and friends. You had to make friends. And having no family over here made it extra difficult.
Did you ever feel like going back?
I don't think so, no. I probably would have if I hadn't have gone well. But luckily, my first game I'd ever played at Lord's, day one of a Lord's championship game, I got 100, and things just never gone back since then.
Every week we answer your questions on the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, and this week is no different. You have a chance to win a prize. So the second competition of the week in this week's show, the prize for this part of the show is an online coaching course courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. And the way you win that is to send in your question to us. We pick a couple every week, and we answer them, and then we choose the best one. So, Bernard, you got the questions there for this week. What are they?
First question's in from Ant, and he's an aspiring fast bowler, 14 years of age, and looks like he's quite ambitious. He wants to do better with his pre-season than he has done in previous ones, so he's just asking what he can do to improve technique and fitness.
Yeah, with pre-season, I wrote an article in the Coach Education area of the site a number of weeks ago about how we can focus on technique at this time of the year leading up to the summer. But I think it's not just about that. It's about practicing skills as well. So a lot of the bowlers I've worked with, particularly back in January, were isolating elements of their action and working off one or two paces up into four paces. And we kept them there for about a month so they could hold all of the enhancements that we've made within their actions. So if you do that off four paces, then it gives you great competency in your action. And obviously, skill execution comes from having a good foundation underneath it. And you see the guys that are performing well in international cricket. They've all got good foundation, great actions. They know their actions inside out, and they can repeat their actions over a huge amount of time under extreme pressure from the batters, under scoreboard pressure. And even if, for example, in test matches, when the footholds go, they're still able to hold their actions together and perform their skills. So I think working off short paces, short number of paces, getting yourself into good positions and then taking that back gradually as you get towards the season is really good, because from those four paces you can then start to practice how to swing the ball, when you bowl your slower ball, what lengths you bowl your slower ball, trying to hit yorkers, and then you can take the run up back and over the course of the next couple of months until you get outside where you can let your full run up go. So that's important. The other thing that I've been working with at the moment with a number of guys is their take up off point. Obviously in indoor nets people bowl a lot of no balls, and particularly fast bowlers bowl a lot of no balls, but I'm not a massive fan of that, because if you're trying to coach somebody to hit length, you know, the pitch length doesn't change. It doesn't matter whether you're indoors or outdoors. So if you're bowling from 17 yards indoors and then you go to 22 yards outdoors, you haven't trained yourself to be able to hit length. You haven't trained your kinesthetics. You haven't trained your action to be able to pull that ball hard into length, which is what all of the top guys do. You've seen Stephen Finn do it fantastically well over the course of the last few weeks over in the UAE against Pakistan. So I always get people to bowl from behind the line, and to be able to do that, they need to know what their takeoff point is. And that takeoff point will only change very, very slightly with run-ups being applied to it. Andy Caddick, I could put down a bowling mark anywhere, and Andy Caddick would hit his takeoff point and hit the front foot line all of the time. It didn't matter whether I put his marker 15 yards away, 20 yards away, 3 yards away. He'd still know exactly where he had to take off from and land. So those are my technical and skill-orientated bits of advice.
And I'll focus on the fitness side of things, because 14 is a bit of a delicate one to cover. You don't know exactly at what stage of development you are, because people develop at different rates. I mean, we've all seen 14-year-olds who are shaving twice a day, and 14-year-olds who look like they're about 8. Generally speaking, you can't go wrong with dynamic and static stretching. Dynamic stretching is where you're moving when you're doing your stretches. That's the best thing to do, is, you know, during your warm-ups for your training sessions, and then the static stretching you can do, you know, last thing at night, something like that, where you're sitting down or standing and holding a stretch for a longer period of time. All that is great, no matter what age you are. Core training is another one of those things where you can do at just about any age, and there's a huge amount of core work you can do. The current thinking really is to avoid the type of stuff where you're curling or crunching, purely because, although it's not bad in and of itself, there's better things you can do, more specific things you can do. If you can get a band, for example, here's a brilliant example. Get a band and you know, one of those big training resistance band type things, and hold it, wrap it around something sturdy, and then stretch it out so it's to the side of you. And then extend your arms out, press your arms out, so you're holding the band with it trying to pull you back towards whatever you've wrapped it around with your arms fully extended. If you just hold that there, then you'll feel your core working to stop you being pulled towards the object with the band. That's a really, really simple exercise you can do. You can do 10, 15, 20 seconds on each side, rest and do it again, and then aim to increase the amount of time that you can hold that there for. And that's just a really simple core exercise that will improve your ability to resist rotation around your spine, which as a fast bowler is a really important thing to do. If you're growing very quickly, then you can do a lot more. If you've reached that point where you're growing very fast, then you can do a bit more. You can do a lot of running, a lot of interval work, get yourself out of breath, really, really aim to build up the endurance by running short distances and then stopping, resting for a short amount of time, and then running a short distance again, interval training basically. And you can do strength training, although that is probably the riskiest thing that you're going to do. So you probably want someone who knows what they're doing to talk you through the type of resistance training that you want to do. And you want to make sure that you're doing it with safe and effective technique all the time. Bodyweight stuff is great to do on your own, but even that, you want to make sure that your technique, for example, on doing a press-up, is absolutely bang on, because if you get it wrong, especially as a fast bowler, then it can cause more harm than good.
Next question is from Satish, and we might need Jim will fix it to answer this one, but he wants to know how to bat well if you've lost form. I contemplate that every Saturday morning, Satish. But
I think it's quite, I mean, although a very brief question, I think it's quite a good one considering the recent run of bad form that Kevin Peterson has had and how he got out of it. So, I mean, Gareth, you worked with KP for a long time. What did he do when he was out of form? What work did he do to get back into form?
He very much focused on his preparation, and it's obviously been a very long period of him not being in form, which is probably the first or maybe second time that he's had that. During the time where I was with him, we had periods where he would start a series well and then not necessarily end a series that brilliantly, which was, could be deemed as a loss of form. And we associated that, when we sat down and reviewed it properly, with his ability to prepare properly. So before a series, he would prepare. He'd always be as fit as he possibly could be. He would analyse the opposition better than anybody else. He would technically be in good nick because he had paid specific attention to line himself up, in particular his backswing. We've got his backswing under control, which is one of the things that I know he's been working on recently. And he just basically was ticking all of the boxes in terms of his preparation. We often found by the time we got to the end of Test Match 2 in a 4-match or 5-match series that he would have just slightly lost some of that area of preparation. So we almost created a bit of a game of ourselves where we'd pretend that the series was just starting up again. And that enabled him to have a strong finish to his series as well as a strong start. So through little bits of communication that I've had with him over the last few weeks, I know that he's really got back into his preparation, and preparation is key to everything.
It's definitely a psychological thing, and it's definitely a thing that is controllable. I think a lot of people consider form to be something which is either bestowed on them or isn't. And it isn't that. It is definitely something which you have control over, and as you've been talking about preparation there. And also, I think, additional to that, is your mindset when it comes to thinking about it. If you go 3 games without scoring a run, do you think to yourself, hang on, I'm out of form here? Or do you think to yourself, well, I must be due a big one next? it's a huge difference in the psychology of thinking, I'm out of form when you walk out to bat, and saying I'm due one because, you know, I haven't had one for a while, because not everyone's going to get 50 or 100 every time they walk out to bat. You know, you might get 3 or 4 good balls in a row, or you might get 2 good balls in a row, then play a silly shot on the third run, and suddenly you're out of form. So I think it's how you frame it is really important. I mean, with KP's example, I looked it up when he scored that first 100 against Pakistan. In all international cricket, it had only been 14 innings since he last scored 100. And when you look at it like that, blimey, you know, I wouldn't mind scoring 100 every 14 games. And in fact, in Test cricket, he scores 100 every 7 games or something that's ridiculous like that. So it's it's often a matter of saying, well, hang on a minute, you know, is it actually a loss of form, or is it just the way that I'm thinking about it? And whether it's a loss of form or whether it isn't, how are you preparing yourself? And that's where what you came in, Gareth, I think, said.
Definitely. And the interesting one on that, which is a really good point you made, is only 14 innings since he got his last 100. But you're right on the framing thing, because actually his last ODI 100 was in 2008, before the series that's recently been played in the UAE. So he got 114 games ago, but how much was he saying, I only got 114 games ago, or was he saying, I haven't got 100 since 2008? And I know they're different formats, but the fact is that he's still capable of scoring hundreds, and he obviously backed it up in the next game as well to further demonstrate that. So you're absolutely right on framing. I think it's massively important. I'd be intrigued to talk to him about his framing around that period of time between 2008 and a few weeks ago.
And in fact, on the Keep Calm and Smash It course, we do talk about his previous loss of form. So he does go into how he sort of got back to form after a bit of a slump. Although we did film it before before this current in quotes loss of form and then return to form. But it's still interesting to hear from him what he thought about how he got back into form. And he talks about framing things in a slightly different way, but it's definitely worth getting the course to find out about that. Berners, what do you do when you're out of form? Cross your fingers? Have a couple of weeks off?
Sometimes, yeah, I tend to kind of suggest to the captain that I'm okay not to play if there are other players available. But my batting coach at school used to always tell me to watch the ball and move my feet. So what I do is, when I'm not doing very well, I concentrate even more to watch the ball and move my feet. And when I'm playing well, I don't watch the ball and move my feet, but I just hit it because I'm playing well. Does that make sense?
I like the watch the ball bit. I think that's really good, and players forget to do that when there's so many other things going on in their head. You know, they're so desperate to get runs. Often the you know, sort of like core thing being the ball, is neglected. And what tends to happen is that you're obviously good players, otherwise you wouldn't be out of form because you've never been in form in the first place. So you've obviously got a bit under your belt in terms of your talent and your ability. And our bodies, particularly batting-wise, we've trained ourselves over a number of years and lots of sessions and lots of balls to be able to react to the stimulus, which is the ball. So when it's full, our body is ready to go forward and hit the ball and score runs. And it recognises that ball and does exactly how it's been trained. The challenge is to make sure that that brain of ours doesn't stop all of the messages from getting into our body and picking up that stimulus quick enough, which is what happens when we go out of form. So watching the ball is very important.
Soapbox time on the show, and every week one of the members of the team gets their chance to rant about a topic for a minute. So, Gareth, this week it's you. What are you going to be talking about this week?
Coaches who always use bowling machines is my topic this week. And there's some interesting research that's being done by the ECB and a couple of universities over in the UK at the moment about the detrimental effects of batters using bowling machines too often. Because a bowling machine, and I'm not talking about the Merlin bowling machine here, the spin bowling machine, I'm talking about just the propelling balls, the one that we have, and I often see players having it cranked up to 90 odd mile an hour or 85 mile an hour, balls being fired at them. When the ball is in, you know when the ball is going to be short, your body doesn't react in the way that it's going to if you're playing in a match, because obviously when the bowler's coming into bowl, you don't know whether it's going to be short or full, and we're picking up on physical cues and we're making our decisions based on that. And the other thing that happens when we bat in matches is that the players naturally unweight their front foot, so the movement is always forward, and we don't get that on bowling machines. So coaches that use bowling machines all the time, get yourself a sidearm.
That's all we've got time for on this week's Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. But before we go, we can pick a winner of our online coaching course, courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. So we had two questions this week, one to the point and one a little bit more detailed and specific to 14-year-old fast bowlers. So Gareth, do we want Ant's 14-year-old fast bowling or Satish's form?
I like Ant's question. It also relates back into some articles that I did recently, which hopefully will promote people to have a look at, look back over that and give themselves a bit of a reminder of the bowling drills that can be done in pre-season. And whether you're in pre-season now because you're in England, or whether you're going to be in pre-season in a few months' time if you're in Australia, New Zealand and other countries around the world, then it's a good guide for you. So we're going to go with Ant's question this week.
Congratulations, Ant, and you can pick up your prize from us at pitchvision.com. Now, if anyone else who is listening wants to send in a question, they can do so, and they get a chance to win exactly the same prize every week, and they get their question answered no matter what. So, Bernice, for people listening and those wanting to send in questions, how would they do that?
You can give us a call on 020-88-167-691. Or drop us an email, and the address is coach@pitchvision.com.
Yes, indeed, and we're all about the future here and social media and all that kind of thing. So we've got PV Cricket Coach as our Twitter, and our Facebook is Pitch Vision Academy. Do a search for that at facebook.com. And you can also subscribe to us in iTunes. Head over to iTunes, do a search for Pitch Vision Academy. And if you don't want to use iTunes, then you can always head over to pitchvision.com/academy and get the feed to put on into whatever reader you want. Just do a search for the podcast section at the bar, at the green bar along the top. That's all for this week. So until next time, we'll see you next week. Cheers, Gareth. Cheers, Bernice.
Cheers, Coach.
Cheers, guys.